You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello and welcome back to That One Time on Tour. As always, I am your host, Chris Swinney. It is about 1 a.m. and I am in my little podcast studio slash catch-all room. And I am very excited to bring you episode 15 of That One Time on Tour. Before I tell you guys about today's episode, I want to tell you about two brand new amazing sponsors that I have that just signed on. First up is a little bit more local for me. It is the Guardian Brewing Company, located right here in Muncie, Indiana at 514 East Jackson Street. The Guardian Brewing Company, they brew their own beer. They've got their own bar. It's a great, great place, and I want you guys to check it out if you are local here in town. If you are local and you go to the Guardian Brewing Company and you tell them that you heard about them on That One Time on Tour, you will receive a $5 gift card towards your next purchase. That's a killer deal. So if you're a listener out there from Muncie or the surrounding areas, make sure that you check that out. If you are not here in central Indiana, make sure that you go to theguardianbrewingco.com and find out where their beer is on tap in your neck of the woods. So check that out. That is theguardianbrewingco.com. My next sponsor, super, super excited about this, rockabilia.com. I want to give a huge shout out to Frankie at Rockabilia for sponsoring That One Time on Tour. He's a great guy, and he came on board and likes the show, and I just want to say thank you very much. Rockabilia is an amazing company. If you guys don't know what it is, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have an idea of what it is. They have band merchandise, and it's all officially licensed by the bands, which that means the bands are getting paid. So, I mean, if you can go buy, you know, a Lucero shirt, or you can go buy an Alexis on Fire shirt, and you know, you want to know that the bands are going to get at least a little bit of that money. If you go on Amazon and you buy a Black Flag shirt, nobody in Black Flag is getting that money. Some dude in China is getting that money. And then when you wash the shirt, the logo is going to fall off. So Rockabilia is a different kind of a company. They have over 500,000 unique items. That is 500,000 unique items officially licensed by the bands. It's the best way to buy band merchandise. It is amazing. The largest selection around. This is like a match made in heaven for this podcast, because just me personally, now I can get anything I want. I could have got it anyway, but now they're a sponsor. It's like, I'm definitely going to go shop there. So if you guys are listening to this podcast and you are interested, go to rockabilia.com. That is rockabilia.com. And when you find all the cool stuff that you want, you find a Propagandhi shirt, you find a Descendant shirt, and then you're going to check out and you're all excited and you're like, man, wouldn't it be cool if I could save some money? And then you remember that you can put in the discount code PCTOTOT, that is PCTOTOT, and you get 15% off your entire order. I'm saving you money. So make sure that you check out both of my amazing new sponsors. And let's get on to the episode, because, you know, I'm tired. It's 1 a.m. and I'm ready to go to sleep. Philip Wynn from A Thorn for Every Heart. We had such a really good time speaking, and I miss the guy like crazy. I haven't seen him in years. When I was playing in Brazil, we run Fearless Records, and we did some tours with A Thorn for Every Heart. And they're great people. Phil is one of my favorite people that I ever met on the road. And we've got some good stories. And we talk about a lot of it here in this podcast. We talk about, you know, the rise and the fall of the band, and some reunion talks and like all kinds of stuff. So without further ado, I'm going to jump right into my conversation with Phil Wynn from A Thorn for Every Heart. Hey, Phil, what's going on, man?
What's up, Chris? How you doing?
I'm doing really well, man. It's great to talk to you again. It's been a really long time.
It's been a real long time, buddy.
It's kind of cool. Like, you know, I found you on Instagram and we followed each other, and I see your kids and your wife and everything all the time. I'm sure you see the same thing on mine, and it's nice to see what's happened in the last, you know, 14, 15 years since we've hung out.
Yeah, man, it's crazy, right? Yeah, it's just with social media, you know what I mean? I don't have Facebook or anything, but like Instagram is the first social media I've had in a really long time, man, just to kind of peek through our old friends that we've toured with or whatever, you know what I mean? And it's crazy. It's just a peek into their lives nowadays, you know?
I mean, it's crazy too, because when we tour together, neither of us were dads.
Oh, no, dude.
So
no.
Now I've got two kids. How many kids do you have now?
I have three.
Three, okay. For some reason, I thought you had four, and I was like, man, that's got to be crazy. What's it like having three? I guess it's one more harder than what I have.
You know what? It's not that bad, man. If you have two, three is nothing. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think go for it. I mean, I know you and your wife are, you know, two. Yeah, what's another one?
Yeah. We've decided that I think we're going to cap it on two. We've got the combo. We've got the little boy and the little girl, so I think we're gonna chill for a while.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect, dude.
So are you still out in California, I take you? Still in Chino?
Yep. I'm in a city right next to Chino. It's called Eastdale, Corona.
Okay.
Been living here for about 2 years. I was in Texas for a while for work. I was in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for about 2 years.
What kind of work were you doing down in Texas?
You know what? I own a installation company where my guys, we install like GPS tracking in like vehicles, construction equipment, stuff. If your car gets stolen, it's going to get recovered. Stuff like that. That's what I do.
Well, that's really cool, man. Did that start kind of after the band kind of went away, or was that always the thing that you were into?
You know what? I did car audio for about 20 years, you know what I mean? And this kind of just went hand in hand with it. You know what I mean? I was doing car audio stuff prior to the band, in between the band when we were off, you know, I mean, on break or whatever, you know, and, right when we get home, I go back to work for, you know, week, 2 weeks, you know, make some money, then head back out, you know?
Well, that's cool. What I'd like to ask you, I kind of start this off the same way with most of my guests. I want you to take me back to the beginning, kind of how you found music and you knew you had a passion for it. Like, what was the moment where you kind of realized that it was something that you wanted to do with your life? Like, I was very, very young. I got a Metallica tape when I was like 7 years old and it changed my life. So I want to hear your story on that.
Dude, okay. The first CD that I ever purchased was back in 91 or 92. My aunt was moving to Japan with her husband, and there was a music store inside of LAX Airport, and my first CD that I bought was Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusion 2.
Okay.
And
so you jumped to the second one. You didn't get the first one.
You know what? It was just there. I think November Rain was out or something, and I knew it was on that album.
Yeah.
I've always loved music, but I remember that was like the first time like I bought something and like really sat down and like studied it, you know what I mean, and just really was into it, you know what I mean? I grew up, I have older sisters that were really into hair metal.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Which, I mean, Poison. I love Poison and Def Leppard. That was my thing growing up, right?
Yeah.
So from there, you mean Guns N' Roses, obviously, that was, they were obviously huge. And
well, when I was younger and I was getting into music too, like I like some hair metal, Skid Row, Poison, stuff like that. When I heard Guns N' Roses, it had that edge to it, almost like that punk rock edge that was dangerous. The other ones didn't seem dangerous.
No, yeah, it didn't. I mean, not till you I didn't find out till like later in life that how gnarly their lives were.
Yeah.
I mean, like, but then from the image, I guess you would say, you know, like it seemed, you know, obviously with the hair metal, the glam stuff, right? It's really, I, you know, from there into like the LA Guns N' Roses, they incorporated like the punk rock, right? Image.
Yeah. I mean, because that was, they still had the makeup and the long hair, but it didn't seem so girly and like cheesy.
Exactly. Definitely a lot more edge, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what drew me to them. And from there, you know what I mean? Like I said, just, I remember seeing it. I had 20 bucks in my pocket. The CD cost like 18, 19 bucks. You know what I mean? Then I bought it. Then like, you know, man, I jammed that thing all the time.
Any standout tracks on that record that you really, really liked other than like the single?
You know what? Was it Civil War that was on that album?
Civil War was actually on the blue one. Was that
one?
Two or one?
No, that was one.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You mean like I ended up getting both
okay.
eventually. You know what I mean? Then just Civil War was actually my jam.
And you had Don't Cry was on both records, but it had alternate lyrics on the other one.
Exactly. So, I mean, that was kind of weird for me at a young age. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is weird, but you know, I guess bands do that.
So how did you start playing guitar? Was that your first instrument or was there something before that?
You know what? It was bass. Because I had an older brother that was learning how to play bass and guitar. You know what I mean? So when he would go to school, I was younger, so school would start later for me. I would, sneak into his room and play his guitar. That's how that all started. So it was in sixth grade, seventh grade.
Did you start taking lessons right away, or was it all pretty much self-taught?
I never took a lesson until, it was pretty much self-taught. In high school, I did take some guitar classes, but it was more just hanging out with friends and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no official lessons.
Okay. Ever. So what was your first band? Was it something right before Thorn for Every Heart, or did you have high school bands?
We had bands up in I would say my first band was probably in junior high, dude. Okay. It was a punk ska band that my buddy John and I, we started. It was just us two just jamming in his bedroom. You know what I mean? It was just guitar and bass. Yeah. I mean, guitar and drums. Sorry. And, we did that for about a year or two. And, in high school, I started another punk ska band, with some other friends. And, I was always into when I started playing music and I was really into the punk ska. Yeah. I think my favorite band that I was into at the time was Homegrown or something like that. You know, a lot of the local bands around here.
I mean, I think growing up for me in the Midwest, we kind of got everything secondhand as far as the West Coast sound, but I'm sure it was pretty a little bit more accessible to you for the Fat Record stuff and the Epitaph stuff.
Oh, dude. Yeah. NOFX was a huge influence on me because, this is all punk rock stuff, but yet they had the melody.
Yeah.
And they were melodic, right? And they would throw in some of that punk ska stuff into their music. You know what I mean? The first album that I really got into them was actually Punk and Drubic.
Okay.
Great record. I knew the other albums. Yeah, but for me, getting into them, that was the first record that, I'm like, yeah, dude, this is my band. And to this day, they're my favorite band.
I mean, to this day, they're my favorite as well. I still listen to NOFX at least two or three times a week, man. I can't get away from it.
Oh, dude. When I'm working, I'm out, in these auto dealers or wherever I'm at. I have my earbuds in, and I've been listening to the Hepatitis Bathtub on audiobook.
Oh yeah. I got that book the day it came out and read it. I haven't checked out the audiobook, but they actually do the audio, correct? They read
exactly.
Their parts.
That's what makes it amazing is that, they are reading their own parts. You know what I mean?
That's great.
And, man. And just by listening to it, I kind of feel like I know them because of it. You know what I mean?
I mean, really cool. That book, I love biographies of musicians. I've read the Motley Crue stuff, even though I'm not a huge Motley Crue fan. I've read the book and I've read a lot of the other books, but man, that NOFX book, there's some crazy stuff in there. And once you get done reading that, you feel like you do know them, you actually know them personally.
Oh, definitely. And like I say, with the audiobook too, you hear their voice, it's just they're talking to you. That's what made it so much more cool,
That's great. Have you had a chance to meet those guys over the years from touring?
Never, dude. Never. We did, no, never have, man. I would say we did Warped Tour, but it was the year before. Okay. And they played the following year or something,
Well, if you ever get a chance to meet those guys, man, they're, Mike's a little crazy sometimes. He tries to, he's not really mean. He tries to be mean, but, the rest of the guys, they're wonderful people, man. So if you get a chance to, they're awesome. They will not disappoint.
Yeah, actually, I would really want to meet Smelly. So that's one guy that I would want to meet from the band.
Smelly's dad is going to be a guest on the podcast very soon.
You know what? I saw that you had Eric Shannon's dad on there, and I'm like, oh, no way. Super stoked. Can't wait to see that.
When I was playing with the Ataris, I'm not really sure if he kind of liked the band or what, but somehow we ended up friends on Facebook, and we just chat every once in a while, and I'm a huge NOFX fan, so when the podcast came up, I asked him to be on the show, and he said, yes, we just haven't got our schedules together yet.
Oh, definitely, dude. I can't wait for that. This can be a
Because I just want to listen. My plan for that, also to any of the listeners out there that care, I'm going to interview my mother and maybe a couple other parents from different, you know, band members from different bands, and just kind of get that other. Now that I'm a parent, I kind of want to know what their thoughts were when their kids were out there doing this crazy stuff, and if they totally supported it or just kind of played along. So talking to Smelly's dad, I think, is going to be really cool.
Oh, that's going to be so cool, man. That's a great point of view, man, to a different, totally different perspective. Like you said, you know what I mean? And I would love to see, you know what I mean, or hear about like how, what my parents thought about, you know, what it was like when I was gone. You know what I mean? For so long.
Well, maybe when I do this little like 3 or 4 part series talking to parents, maybe I'll get your folks on there.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be awesome.
Awesome. Okay. So, tell me a little bit then, A Thorn for Every Heart. Like, how did that all come together? How did you guys, I know you weren't exactly like an original. I know you came on like second wave kind of, because they already had it going.
Yeah, I joined the band maybe 6 to 7 months after they formed. So, but how it came apart, you mean, we were all members of different bands in our town of Chino Hills. The members of A Static Lullaby and our band were kind of like, we were all in bands together. Our band's dismembered. Then they formed Static Lullaby, then Thorn formed, right?
Okay.
I wasn't part of it in the original, you know, as an original lineup, but, you know, they got together. I want to say 7 months later, they kind of were having some problems with their guitar player, which is our good friend. His name is Joel. You know, I mean, they weren't seeing eye to eye on things. You know, we were young, stupid.
Yeah.
Didn't really care about whatever.
Everybody's got those stories, man, for bands.
So that's, I mean, and they're like, hey, Phil, you know what I mean? You want to join our band? You know what I mean? We're going to be doing some stuff here pretty soon. Labels are looking at us. We really want to take this seriously. So I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm in. So
were you playing, were you playing in a band at that point, or was it just,
no, okay. No. My band, that I was in, we were called Nothing Approved. We were like a pop punk band. We were doing some pretty cool shows. Our last show that we played was, let's see, Yellow Card, Something Corporate. Finch was about to play, but they were in the studio recording. What is that album? The big album. Yeah, the one with When It Is Burn and stuff like that. They were in the process of recording that, so they couldn't play. But we had to see. Yeah, Yellow Cars, Something Corporate, Days Away. Man, it was a really cool lineup, man. We were doing a lot of stuff with Drive Thru back in the day.
Okay.
I mean, they were taking a liking to us, and we were going to dismember, in a sense, right?
Yeah.
To change our name to something else. Then during that transition of them changing our name, the bass player quit. His name was Phil. And he ended up forming Static Lullaby and some other friends and whatnot. And so I was in between bands. I wasn't doing anything. I was just working at the time.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And when they approached me about joining the band, I'm like, let's do it.
Awesome.
And within a month or two, man, we had a few showcases that we did with some labels. Then Matt Galley picked us up as a booking agent.
Okay.
And he put us out on tour, like, right away. Actually, our first show tour out of town thing we did was with Static Lullaby, because even though, I mean, we weren't in bands together, we were still all really good friends. So our first tour away from home was, our show away from home was with Static Lullaby.
Were you touring on that first tour without a release, or was there something out?
The band recorded an EP pretty much right away of, like, I think they were a band for maybe 2 months, 2-3 months. And Justin, our bass player, he was a, you know, recording engineer and producer. So he's like, hey, dude, let's just put something together. We'll put it out. They put out a 5-song EP called Silence is Golden.
Okay.
And that was released. When that was all done and getting released, they had already kicked out the original guitar player, and I already came in.
Okay.
So I guess everything happened so quick, man. And when that got released, because I remember, like, hey, man, we need to put some money into get these CDs pressed. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll put some money in. Let's do this, you know? So that got released. We released it through, like, Smart Punk Records.
Okay, yeah.
Actually, they're still around, I think. Yeah, we put some stuff out through Smart Punk. They were selling our CDs and T-shirts and whatnot. They were helping us out a lot. With that being said, you know, our CD was, it was selling pretty well, man. You know, we pressed, I think 1,000 initially, but then within like a month or two, we had to go press a few thousand more.
Wow.
So, at the time, you know, it was MySpace, dude. That was huge. And, we were kind of like the hype band at the time. You're like, who's this band? So people were checking us out.
It used to freak me out on the MySpace stuff because bands got labeled MySpace bands, but it was insane that a band could record a couple songs, put it up on MySpace, and all of a sudden within a couple weeks they had like 80,000 people that liked their band, and then they were touring. Like, not even, it was just insane.
We were definitely a MySpace band, man. We didn't like break through like some of these MySpace bands, but you know, we definitely got our big jump by being on there. You know what I mean? Matt Galley, started booking us, and we got a lawyer pretty fast right after we put that out, even on MySpace. And, they helped, shop us around a little bit, and we ended up, signing with Kickball Records, which was a
part of Interscope, right?
Interscope. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was awesome, man. It was, you know, being a band, not even a year.
So
and already being signed.
When you guys signed with Interscope, like, were there other offers on the table from other labels? Like, what made you guys decide to go with Interscope?
Matt Galley ended up being part of the label, part of the imprint of Kickball. So he's like, you know, we want to kind of do this grassroots type of deal. You know what I mean? Like, through touring, we toured all the time, dude, for the first like 4 or 5 years, like all the time, just because with Matt Galley, you know, at the time he was doing, he's doing Seuss, and he was doing Taking Back Sunday, My Chemical Romance. It's some pretty big names, dude. And we ended up going out on tour with these guys, you know, just because we were just affiliated with them. So
that's cool.
He put us all out there, man. It was awesome. But yeah, we worked very hard.
And was that, so when you signed to Interscope, did, I'm trying to remember the timeline. I have notes, but I'm not looking at them because I know you. But so the EP's out, did they like re-release it, or did you guys do something new right away for Kickball, for Interscope?
Yeah, they wanted some songs off there because they were we put out the EP, and maybe within 4 months, Interscope bought the EP from us.
Okay.
They bought the recordings. And it, pretty much everything ceased right there with the EP. You know what I mean? They weren't selling it anymore. We had it on MySpace. That was pretty much on MySpace and Pure Volume, I believe. That's where it was on. And they're like, hey, we want to put you guys in the studio, you know, write some more songs. We might pick some songs off of here, you know what I mean? And we can re-record them onto the album, which we did, you know what I mean? So
the first thing then was a full length, so it was like a mixture of the old EP songs with some new stuff?
Exactly.
And what was the name of that record?
Things Aren't So Beautiful Now.
And about what year was that? Was that when you and I, toured together?
Yeah. We were on tour with you when that got released.
Okay.
That was the Emery Brazil.
Yeah.
Tour.
From first to last. Trying to think who else was on that tour. A lot of bands were on that tour.
Yeah, dude. Let me see. Actually, I was peeking through my stuff, and I actually found my laminate from that tour.
I have mine too in my little scrapbook.
I'm gonna try to pull it out right here. Yeah,
pull it out and see what's on there. And it's funny, right. It's funny, like, I've the first, you know, this is going to be episode 15, and the first 14 episodes I've talked to some people that had nothing to do with it, but a lot of the people I've talked to were on that tour. So hopefully at some point this podcast will move away from that one huge tour we did.
Yeah, that was so much fun, dude. Yeah,
it was a great tour. Yeah.
Let's see. Emery Brazil, From First to Last, Name Taken, Down to Earth Approach, Emmanuel, and A Thorn for Every Heart.
Yeah, that was a great tour, man.
Oh, geez, dude.
That was a long tour, too, man. That was crazy.
You guys were on the whole thing, though, right?
Yeah, we were on the whole thing. It started in Seattle, and it ended in Seattle, and it was like 8 or 10 weeks all across the United States and Canada. It was crazy.
Yeah, we did like the last 3 weeks of it, I believe, because we jumped on after Emmanuel jumped off. Like,
yeah, Emmanuel jumped off. We did some West Coast stuff with you guys, and I'm pretty sure we did some Texas with you guys as well.
Yeah, we did all the Texas stuff, because I remember when we first met you, we were in Nashville. We were playing at some venue in Nashville, and
that's when I joined. I started playing.
Yeah. He joined the next day, dude, because I remember the Brazil dudes, their bass player.
He quit
played that show. Yeah. He quit after that show. Then you played the following.
Yeah. And that's funny that you guys, you didn't even get to see them with him. Like your first impressions were, oh yeah, Swiss is just in the band. I was just the tour manager before that.
Yeah.
I was thinking before I got on the phone with you, and I'm planning on having Kelvin on here as well, but one of my favorite stories ever, and I don't even know if you were involved, but we were in San Antonio, Texas, and Kelvin and I were hanging outside smoking a cigarette or something, and we met these big, like, and I don't even know if this is PC or not, but like big cholo guys. And they wanted to like hang out with us and they wanted to smoke a joint. And I think he was probably into it. I wasn't, cause I don't really do that, but we got in the car with these guys and one of the big dudes was like, hey, I sing. And Kelvin's like, I sing too. And then they played like their band's like instrumental demo, which was really good. And the guy started singing and then Kelvin started harmonizing with him. And then Kelvin started singing. It was like the craziest thing ever. We hung out with the guys for like 2 hours.
That is awesome, dude.
I think it was just me and Kelvin. I'm not sure if you were involved.
I don't remember. I have a really good memory. I don't remember that.
Okay, well, you have a good memory. Then I'd really like to, before we kind of go on further, that now we've jumped to the part where you and I are hanging out, tell me some stories from that tour that you remember, anything in particular that comes to mind.
Oh, my gosh, dude. This was actually right before the tour started. We were actually driving. We just finished a tour with... what's that band? Funeral for a Friend. We just ended that tour and we drove home because we had a radio show to do. Then after that radio show, we left California to drive all the way out to Nashville to start the Emory tour. And our merch guy, Vince.
I remember Vince.
He was vegetarian for a long time. And I don't know how we talked him into eating a chicken sandwich from like Carl's Jr.
Yeah.
And that chicken sandwich, dude, tore him up because, you know, obviously not eating meat for at least 4 or 5 years at this point. We suckered him into doing it. And, like, as we were driving out there, just, like, in the middle of the night, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, he's like, dude, you guys need to pull over. I was driving. You need to pull over. I need to use the restroom. Really bad. So we pull off to the side of the interstate. He runs. I see him running out to, like, the desert, right?
Yeah.
Because he had to go really, really bad. I guess what happened was he was crapping so much in one area that he was kind of like moving around, right? and the last part, like the last, you know, I mean, he's like, he was finishing up. He was next to our trailer and like with his head facing in towards the wheel, right?
Okay.
And I saw him run out in the field. I didn't see him go back next to the van or the trailer. So I thought it would be funny. Hey, let's drive up a little bit. Let's pretend like we're leaving him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of drove up maybe about 20 yards or so. And as I'm pulling away from that dead stop, I felt a thud and like, you know, I felt the trailer kind of jump.
Wow.
Didn't think anything of it. So we pulled up like 20 yards. We stop. We see him like running towards the van. You know what I mean? He busts open the barn doors on the van and he's crying. He's like, you guys fucking ran me over. I was like, oh my, I'm like, I was in shock. I'm like, what happened? He's like, pretty much he was standing next to the van, you know what I mean, squatting next to the trailer and the van, and I pulled forward the wheel of the trailer, hit him in the head.
Wow.
He spun around, fell in his own in his own crap, and I ran over his foot and leg with the trailer.
Wow.
So that's what that thud was.
Was he okay? I mean,
he was fine. You know, he had some really gnarly, like, bruising, that looked just like tire marks.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And gravel was like embedded in his skin for, I want to say a good week or so. I felt really bad, but it was really funny at the time. You know what I mean? So that was a very memorable, story that I had going into that tour. You know what I mean?
Okay. So what were your first like impressions? You guys had been doing some big tours and that tour was fairly large. Like the shows were really good. What was your first impression of everybody that you met? And when you got on that tour, like how was it for you guys?
Dude, it was amazing, dude. This was actually our first tour. Like cause we did like little smaller runs with different bands, you know, like a week stuff, 2 week stuff. But this was the first big tour that we were part of at the time. And, dude, it was amazing. We're like, you know, people would come see us, you know, at these other shows, wouldn't be that big of a crowd or anything. But once we hopped onto this tour, it was like a night and day difference. Like, oh my goodness, dude. Cause we were opening, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I just remember when I met you guys, especially you and Kelvin, like, I mean, the other guys were great too, but I really connected with you guys, and it was great to have more friends on the tour. Like, I didn't meet anybody on that tour that I didn't like, but you guys, I seemed like,
you know, we hung out with you a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I remember hanging out with you like every day, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We just go listen to the band or just strolling through the neighborhoods. You know what I mean? Just kind of around the venue and stuff. Yeah. That's what we were doing.
And I was moving back from, I was living in Alabama for a while, then on the beach, and then I moved to Jamaica for a job. And when I moved back from Jamaica to Indiana, I was going through an old tote of stuff that I had, and I still have my A Thorn for Every Heart hoodie that you guys gave me.
Jeez, dude. Oh, my goodness.
It's very old. It's got some holes in it, but it's still rocking, man.
You know what? I have a picture of you somewhere wearing, it's a jogger.
Yeah, yeah.
Gray with red print, maybe?
I had a jogger, and I think I also had a zippy, like a hoodie, and I'm pretty sure I had a couple shirts. Like, you guys pretty much hooked me up.
Yeah, dude. I remember having a photo. I have, you know what I mean, pictures and hard drives and just random things like everywhere, dude.
If you have any pictures of us together or anything, send them to me, and I'll put it up in the show notes for the episode.
Will do, buddy. I got to go do some fishing, but I know I got something.
Do some fishing. Okay, so is there any other stories with that tour, or do you want to, like, move on? I'm interested.
You know what?
There are.
Actually, it was funny because I remember when we hit up that Nashville tour, that was the first date for us was that Nashville show. I remember meeting a girl and her bandmates, and we were talking, you know, I mean, just, you know, oh, you know what? We play in this band. It was actually Haley and the dudes from Paramore.
Okay, yeah.
They were at the show. They're at the show, and
I think I met them too, because I mean, I, you know, I'm acquaintances with them. I don't know them very well, but I do now that you're saying that. I've totally spaced out that they were at that show.
They were at that show, and I remember talking to them the following year at Warped Tour. They were playing another stage, and our stage, we were playing on the Smart Punk stage, and we ended up next to each other, you know what I mean, playing, and I remember just chit-chatting with them, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, obviously, you know, they knew who we were at the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh yeah, we saw you guys at, remember you talked to us at, I forget the venue name, but in Nashville. I'm like, yeah, what's going on?
I think the venue was called The Muse.
The Muse, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. I remember that.
I have a decent memory. I'm older than you, though, so I'm like, I'm starting to lose stuff, but I still remember little bits and pieces. So I wanted I wanted to do this podcast so maybe my I would fill in the gaps in my brain with everybody else's stories.
Yeah, man. That when you started doing this and you're like, oh, you know, and you asked me like, hey, dude, I want to have you as a future guest, and like, I saw your little lineup. I'm like, dude, this is so cool.
It's been going really, really well, man. And I wanted to have you on sooner. It's just, you know, scheduling and trying to get everybody in. I'm glad I'm finally having you on here, because it's always fun to talk to people that I'm a fan of and that I've met that maybe I didn't tour with. But, you know, someone like you that we actually had, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks on the road together, it's cooler to talk to someone that we actually have experiences together.
Yeah, man. And the funny thing is after the tour, we always kept in touch. Like, you were playing in other bands. They're like, hey, Phil, can you, you know, give my band a shout out or something, or do something like that on my shit? I'm like, hell yeah, dude, let's do this.
You guys hooked me up, because I had a couple other bands I was playing in at the time, and we were like kind of startups, and you guys had quite a presence online. So yeah, man, you were so generous and nice to help us out that way. I appreciate it, man.
Dude, like I said, you know, we became boys after that, you know what I mean? And we've always kept in touch up until, you know, probably within the last, you know,
I would say years. I'd say like when I joined the Ataris, I think you and I hadn't spoken for a while. And then there were a couple times in there where maybe we kept in touch a little bit when we were in LA or something. I don't think we ever saw each other, but, but then on Instagram, I saw you one, like, people you might know. And I was like, oh my God, it's Phil. Like, so yeah, it's awesome to reconnect, man.
Yeah. Dude, I think the last time I saw you was when we were on tour, we were passing through and we ended up staying at your house in Muncie.
Yeah, I remember that, man. That was a lot of fun. I don't even know if I went to the show. I think I just said, you guys can come. Here's my address.
Yeah, we were actually, I don't know if we're passing through or playing nearby. So I forget exactly, but
I think you guys might have played in, you might have played in Indy or Chicago or somewhere, and like my house was on the way to the next one.
Exactly. That's what it was. Yeah. That's what it was.
So, yeah, I totally spaced that until you brought that up. I forgot that that even happened.
Yeah, dude, that was quite a while ago.
My house, it's funny, a lot of the people that have been on the podcast, they always bring up this thing. I remember when we stayed at your house. My house was kind of like this wayward house for bands when they would be on tour.
Oh, yeah, dude.
It'd be hard to do that now with my kids. They'd probably drive everybody crazy.
Oh, dude, you know what I mean? I've had a few friends. I got my offer to them. Like, hey, if you guys are passing through, dude, you know what I mean, just swing by. I got a pretty decent-sized house over here in California.
Cool, man. So after that tour was over then, like, what was next? Were you guys just more touring, more touring? I mean, I seem to – in my research that I did on you guys, I saw that, you know, after that you guys did a full-length for Interscope, but it didn't actually come out, did it?
Yeah. We did a full length with Matt Squire and Mark Hoppus, actually.
Wow.
They recorded.
What was it like recording with Mark? He seems like a really good guy. I've met him a couple times in passing.
Sweetest dude, man. He was hilarious. Because it's a studio out here in LA that Travis and Mark own.
Okay.
And at the time, Blink was on hiatus, and it was all the Plus 44 stuff when we were recording with them.
Okay.
And it was actually. They were amazing, dude. Like, oh, do you guys need anything? You know what I mean? Just like regular dudes, right? Yeah. And funny. Just cracking jokes and just being really, really, really sweet dudes.
So was it Matt Squire and Mark at the same time? Like, was Mark doing
Squire did the initial, like, 10 or 11 songs. And the label wanted some more songs. They're like, hey, let's... get Mark Hoppus to do a few songs because, you know, we live fairly close, and the label wanted a few more songs for B-sides and whatever, you know what I mean? So we ended up doing two songs with him.
Okay.
So great experience. Just a bummer that it didn't get released because I thought they were great songs, you know? You had a...
So what happened with that? Like, did it... I mean, I know in the Ataris, you know, when, like, Ataris were on Columbia, and then the newer record kind of got pushed to a subsidiary, and then a lot of people got fired. So it seems like you hear that story with all kinds of bands. Like, is that kind of what happened? Did it just kind of get shuffled around?
Matt Galley was part of the label. He left the label to form Photo Finish.
Okay.
Because... I think Interscope, there's a lot of red tape. We're like, you know, hey, man, you guys can't do that, this and that. And he just kind of like, well, I'm just going to do my own thing. And with that being said, our subsidiary that we were on got, you know, absorbed by the company. So we were on Interscope.
Okay.
Everything was set to be released. We had a release date. But, like, I want to say about a month prior to it, like, hey, you know what? We want to do some more promotion to it, so we're going to pull it. We're going to push the date back to another date. Getting pushed. And they are like, well, we can't work with you guys anymore for whatever reason. You know what I mean?
And they own the recordings. They own the masters. Is there any way that, have you tried to get them back? I mean, what's the status on that?
You know what? I think we did look into seeing how much it would cost to get it back. But at the time, dude, it was just, who has money like that? You know what I mean? Just lying around unless we, you know, went to another label and they bought it out or whatever. You know what I mean? It just wasn't doable. It probably still isn't doable.
So did that kind of contribute to the downfall of the band? Like, of the band actually stopping playing?
No, I would say that definitely, you know, I mean, being dropped, that was a huge blow, man. That's like an ego thing. Like, you know what I mean? You thought you're doing something so cool and, you know, want to make a difference, right? You know what I mean? I'm not saying that we wrote the best songs that, you know what I mean, would sustain us, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we didn't write the best songs, but they were great to us, and we wrote the best songs that we could write, and we wanted people to hear it. You know what I mean? There are releases out there because the label was sending out, like, advanced copies to, like, writers and whatnot, so they're out there.
And so you have a copy of it, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah. We all have copies. We have the master. Like, dude, Interscope was, like, just throwing money at us, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I 250 plus, for sure.
Wow.
So they're like, do it.
What are the legal ramifications? I mean, are you guys allowed to, like, put something up online without charging money? I mean, like, is it can you let the people hear it, or is there just so much red tape?
I don't think we can put it out officially like that, even for free, you know, because they do own the masters, right?
Yeah.
And it is, those recordings do belong to them. But it is out there. Like I said, it's not because we leaked it or anything. It's just because they sent out so many advanced copies to writers and, you know, for reviews and whatnot, you know? So it's out there.
So
on the internet.
Did you guys do your publishing through Interscope, or did you have your publishing through somebody else?
We did all our publishing through BMI.
Okay, okay. So, I mean, are you still getting checks once in a while?
Every now and then. I haven't seen one in a while, but, I mean, every now and then they'll pop up, you know what I mean?
It's always crazy. Like, they're always big at first, and then years later, they're like, you know, I can go buy a soda with the money.
Yeah, it's probably like that amount now. But, I mean, I'm sure they recouped everything from that first album.
I'm sure they recouped everything from that. That's why, like, I wish... The issue that I have with major labels a lot of the times, because I have a lot of friends that have gone through the exact same thing that you're going through, is that, okay, you shelve the record, you drop the band, what good is it doing you? It's not doing you any good at all. Give it back to the band. It makes me mad that you guys can't release the stuff that you guys did on that record.
You know, I don't know what it is now. I mean, if we were to maybe get some help from some lawyer, maybe some advice. That'd be freaking cool to have something like that out. Like, we even talked about in the past, like, let's just re-record them, because they just own those recordings.
Yeah, they own the masters of that record. You guys own. I'm sure you guys wrote them. I mean, you guys can go re-record anything you want.
Exactly.
I mean, that kind of. A lot of the people out there listening, I'm not sure, we don't get super into business on this podcast, but, you know, like, the reason that Prince changed his name to that symbol wasn't because he was crazy. It was because he wanted out of his contract.
Yeah. He couldn't record as Prince.
So he changed his name to a symbol that you couldn't pronounce. You couldn't even say, cause it's just a symbol. And then he released all those other records. People don't ever really think about the business side of things, and it's got to be super frustrating even now, this many years later, that you have this great record that you guys did that's just sitting somewhere.
Yeah, I got to send you some songs. I have all the MP3s.
I really want to hear it, man. I'm excited to hear it.
You know, it sounds amazing, because Matt Squire mixed a handful of songs. He did majority of the songs, but then, let's see, Matt Squire, we had Neil Avron. Make some songs on there too.
Okay.
Dude, we have some big names on there, dude.
That's crazy. So that record got shelved, and that was kind of a blow to the band. So what actually did happen? Cause I mean, I just remember at one point I just kind of quit hearing stuff about the band.
Yeah. You know what I mean? When that happened, it was definitely a big blow to us. I mean, we were, you know, we're like, fuck, dude, what are we going to do? We had a bunch of tours all lined up too. But after that, you know what I mean? In support of the release and stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But during, man, there was a tour that we did with, it was The Sleeping, A Day to Remember, and another band, Valera, I believe that's what the name was. And our record was supposed to be released during that tour. Then it got pulled, right? Like, maybe a week or two before it came out.
Wow.
They told us, like, we're not going to release it. We're going to push it back because of this and that. Like I said, it got pushed back a few times. So by the end of that tour, we're like, okay, so what's gonna happen? And at this time, we were in talks with Freeze Management.
Okay.
They liked us. They wanted to work with us, and we were working with them for a few months. Then they got the call saying that, hey, we're gonna drop the band and shelf the album. You know what I mean? And they called us and like, hey, man, this is what's going on. What do you guys want to do? Fuck, dude. You know, like I said, we had some tours lined up, but then we're like, well, we're doing these tours to support the album. That was
you don't just want to be out there spinning your wheels. I mean, you're not. That was one thing with the Ataris. When I was playing with the Ataris, there was so much red tape and so much different things going on with the new record that we were recording. We just kept doing these almost like greatest hits tours. It's like, yeah, it's fun to be on the road, but if you're not furthering your career, it's kind of pointless, right?
Yeah, yeah. At that point, like I said, dude, and. Like, we can't continue, like, we can't afford to do all these tours without supporting anything. We've got nothing to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just bad. And we pulled a few tours that we had booked. And during that time, let's see, I think Jeff left the band shortly after that, Jeff left the band, and we were looking for somebody else. We ended up getting our buddy Casey out of Dallas. He's a friend that we met through touring, you know what I mean? And he ended up moving to California and, you know, stayed in touch. And Kelvin asked him, like, hey, man, you want to come play with us? And that was the second reincarnation of the band, in a sense. You know, we had a new drummer because we never had a permanent drummer. When on the Emory tour, you met Matt. We had a guy named Matt play. He was out of Boston.
I remember Matt.
No, he's at New York, but yeah, so he played with us for a little bit. Things didn't work out, so we, for a while, we were just you know, floating drummers. You know, we having friends play. We had a buddy, Tyler. He actually was in the band. All this happened with us getting dropped was when he was in the band. And after we got dropped, a few months later, he ended up leaving the band to go play for another band. So we were down a guitar player and drummer. So Casey joined the band, and another buddy of ours named Matt. He was the one that actually did the studio session drumming in on It's Hard to Move You, the album that got shelved.
Okay.
He was a buddy of Matt Squire's that he brought in to record for us.
And at this point, like, even when you guys were hot and heavy with Interscope, I mean, is everybody just playing in the band, or do you guys have jobs? Like, what is your setup during that
time? You know what? I always had a job. Like, I've always worked. Like, even we'd be gone for, like, 6 months straight. I'd go home. I'd start work the next day. Like, I worked, you know, I had a lot of friends that owned like stereo shops and whatnot. So I would go and help out, you know what I mean? And work. Kelvin, if we were home long enough, he'd end up doing something. I mean, for the most part, a lot of the guys, it was either myself or Justin. Justin was always recording bands. Okay. He was booking bands and recording bands. Like, we get home, like, you know, I have this project I need to do for 2-3 days or whatever it may be, you know what I mean? So he was working, doing that. And I was working at stereo shops and stuff, and everybody else was just kind of living it up, sleeping in.
So you guys recorded another EP then, correct?
Yes. After our, you know, I mean, our lineup change with Kelvin, me, Casey, Matt, and Justin, we recorded an EP. We actually did a lot of it out of my house and Justin's house.
Okay.
So, well, actually, I thought it turned out amazing. It sounded great. You know, couldn't tell that it was done in a house. But hey, man, everybody has their home studios nowadays. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we recorded 5 songs and put out an EP. We toured on that for a little bit. And that was towards the end of the band, dude. It's just, we were coming back, breaking even on tours, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Or totally losing money. And we couldn't really do it anymore. So that's what kind of brought on, you know, I mean, the hiatus from the band.
Was it kind of like something that built up over time, or do you remember like the moment when it was like, man, this is just not working for us anymore?
Yeah. You know, we were doing a tour. We were doing a tour and we were just losing money. I mean, our van was just not agreeing with us. You know what I mean? The radiator broke. I had to swap it on the side of the road type of deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've been there many times.
You know, it's just things like that. We're like, oh, dude, this sucks. Like, it was like bad thing after bad thing was just happening. You know what I mean? Then shows weren't any good to where, like, we were just losing money. You know what I mean? And I remember one time, like, dude, we have enough money for, like, for gas for the next few shows, dude. And that's it. Hopefully we sell some stuff so we can survive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That type of deal. And this is, we knew, but didn't know, like, this was going to be like our last like tour.
Yeah.
You know, it was with Ivory Line, I believe. Yeah. It was Ivory Line. And the shittiest part of this was, we were out of California for about 2 months straight because we were, you know, road dogging it. Right. And our first show back in California was in this city called Modesto, which is like Central California.
I've been to Modesto.
It's my head got stolen.
Okay.
And Casey, his guitar head got stolen. So
did they steal like right out of the van or the trailer? Like, what was the
at the venue?
Oh, at the venue. Wow.
Yeah, and like we had road cases on all our stuff, and I had like a bright yellow like road case, and. He just walked off with it.
That's crazy, man.
So that was just a
nail in the coffin, right?
Of unfortunate events.
You guys are like worried that it's probably going to be the last tour anyway, and then you get back home and somebody steals their stuff.
Yeah, dude. And we had maybe about 5 or 6 shows left after that. You know, luckily the other band we were on the tour with, they're like super great dudes. And they're like, yeah, dude, just use our gear, man. No worries. You know? So that's what we did for the remaining of that tour. And we did a few shows after that, like locally, but that was pretty much it, dude.
Has there been any reunions since then, or has there been any talk of anything coming up like soon, or like, do you guys talk a lot still?
Yeah, we do actually. We talk often actually. We actually just text the dudes. We have a little group thread text thing that we always send out to each other, you know. We had a reunion show 2 years ago, back in 2016. It was us and a Static Lullaby. We played at the Roxy in LA.
Okay.
And actually, it was a great turnout, dude. It was 350, 400 kids there.
Wow.
Yeah, a decent amount, dude. You know, a lot of family and stuff, too. But, you know, it was really cool to be able to play and have fun like that. You know what I mean?
So that was just a one-off kind of thing?
That was a one-off deal. Yeah. Like, actually, I was living in Texas.
Okay.
At the time. And I flew out just, you know, I mean, maybe a few days prior to rehearse and play the show.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, but it was fun, dude. But as for anything else, you know, we always talk like, hey, let's do some recordings or something, you know what yeah. I mean? But I mean, we're all busy, you know, with me, with kids and stuff like that, you know.
Kids change, dude, they change everything, man. I mean, I wouldn't trade them for the world, but my life is way different now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I know, buddy. Like I have my guitars and my amps all set up, dude, in my house, but my amp probably hasn't been turned on in 2 months.
My amp has not been turned on for probably a year. I have an amp at work because I teach guitar for a living, so I play that amp there. But I'm looking at my Orange right now, and it's just sitting on the floor, and it's got dust on it.
Yeah, dude. Like I said, I have a whole corner of my house upstairs that is just dedicated to, like, I have some recording gear that I have set up, but I don't use. You know, my amps, my two half stacks and my guitars are just hanging on my wall.
Wow.
You know, collecting dust.
I mean, that's...
But hey, it looks nice.
Yeah, it looks good when people come over. Like, I'm sitting in my little makeshift podcast studio, and I've got my guitars on the wall and my amps in the corner. And I just bought my son a little Fender Squire Mini the other day. So he's two and a half.
I saw that.
He's 2 and a half. He's got his first guitar. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, man. So that's cool, man, that you're getting your son into music, you know?
I told this to a couple of the other guests too, and I'm sure that you'll probably feel the same way. Like if Silas, my son, if he comes to me when he's like, you know, 16, 17 years old, he's like, hey dad, this summer, me and my friends are going to try to nickel and dime it across the country playing music. I'll be like, okay, let's go, man. I'll help you out. I'll drive the van.
Yeah, dude. I want to be the same way because my son, he's 6 now, but probably for the past 8 months or so, I bought him a kit. So he takes drum lessons. He has a drum teacher that comes to our house.
Wow, that's cool.
That once a week, and she gives him drum lessons, dude. And it's freaking awesome, dude, that he wants to do some type of music. I don't care what my kids do.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want to push anything on my kids, but I definitely want to make it available to them, you know?
Exactly, and that's how I feel about it. And if you want to play, yeah, let's do it. You know, cool. I found a kid on, like, Craigslist or something like that, and we bought him one. He liked it. So I took a few lessons on it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy you something better. Yeah. So ended up going to Sam Ash and ended up getting him a Ludwig pocket kit, the Questlove pocket kit.
Oh, awesome, man. Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit of an upgrade. It sounds good for what it is, you know, and great learning.
That's cool.
Learning kit, you know what I mean? So it'll grow with him for the next couple of years.
Well, I'll tell you, man, we're approaching an hour, and that's where I usually like to cap these things off. I feel like we haven't scratched the surface, but I feel like we've talked about a lot of good stuff, though, as well. Do you have anything coming up right now, musically or otherwise, that you would like to talk about, something to promote, or is anything going on like that?
You know what, Thorn, we've talked recently about maybe re-recording some songs, and possibly they asked us to do a show recently. Out here, they have a lot of those emo nights where, like, a lot of DJs, you know, spin records at these clubs, right? You know, some nostalgic stuff, you know what I mean?
It seems like it's coming back around. I mean, I hear about the emo night stuff quite a bit. Like, you know, my singer in the Ataris, Chris Rowe, just did something with Marco from Sugar Cult out in L.A. And Kelvin was telling me a while back that he was doing some emo night stuff.
Yep. Yeah. It's where he does it. It's out here in, Pomona, California.
Okay.
They do emo nights. They just had their 1 year anniversary and they wanted us to play it, which was like the 12th, just a couple days ago. And, they wanted us to play, but just not enough time to get everything ready. You know what I mean? That would have been a pretty cool show to do. I think Nate from Finch was actually the guest DJ for that night.
That's cool, man.
You know, that's crazy, man. But as for anything new, you know, there's nothing that I'm really doing musically. You know what I mean? I think, like I said, the Thorn guys, we all wanted to get together and we want to re-record those songs that we did for the Scrap the Album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, hopefully we can do that soon and put that out.
Well, man, I really look forward to hearing the song. So yeah, if you get around to it, you know, send me some stuff. I'd love to check it out.
I'll definitely, I'll send you the complete album that was a scrap, dude. You know, it sounded amazing. Like everything about it was awesome. Great. It was great mix. Great everything, dude. Just a bummer that not many people heard it.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, we'll end this conversation. I'm going to ask you a question. Now, this is called That One Time on Tour. So I have actually two-part question. I want to hear about the coolest like city or place that you've been to on the road, and then maybe one that you did not like.
I would say place I did not like on tour was Camden, New Jersey for the Warped Tour.
Okay. I've done that one. It's not the most wonderful place.
I almost got arrested. I guess I kind of did get arrested. They handcuffed me, put me on the curb. Oh, he pretty much ticketed me. We left the venue where we were playing, and we wanted to go get something to eat because the catering at Warped Tour wasn't whatever. It just wasn't good. So we just popped out with our van to go get something real quick. But, you know, I mean, as we were coming back in, the police officer's like, you guys can't come back in here. Like, we got to play. We're going to be on in like an hour. And he's like, nope, can't come back in. Security guard flags me in. All right, no, come in. Go ahead. So I pull in back to our parking spot. And that cop, dude, he was running at us. He pulled me out of the car, handcuffed me. Jeez. Like, oh, you made the biggest mistake of your life. I'm like, what did I just do? I just drove a van and parked it. You know what I mean? He's like, not even the president can get into here. he was just power tripping, dude. And Kevin Lyman found out that I was getting arrested for trying to park our van. He came out and cleared everything up. He's like, you know what I mean? And The only thing I got was two tickets, which I had to hire a lawyer. You know, us living in California, it wasn't practical for me to go fly out there and do that. So we hired a lawyer. Cost me a few grand to get the tickets all cleared up and stuff, dude. So that was the worst.
That's crazy, man.
As for the best, man, dude, I there's no way I could put, you know, a finger on one show. I would say the best cities I've ever been to were, like, let's say Portland, Seattle,
okay,
Denver. You know,
did you guys do anything out of the country at all during the band?
Canada.
Okay. Did you just do like West Canada, Western Canada? Did you do anything like anything else?
Yeah, we did Western Canada. And that's funny because our drummer couldn't get in because he had a outstanding, he didn't have a warrant, but he was arrested a few months prior to us playing that, you know, but they just didn't, they're like, nope. He can't come in. So we got him a hotel and the drummer from the band Roses Are Red, he ended up filling for us. He learned the songs in like an hour.
Wow.
2 hours. He played with us before. They toured with us before. So
that's cool.
They knew the songs. So it was easy for him. He did a few shows with us, but then once we went back to the States, our drummer buddy that was filling in for us was able to play.
Well, that's cool.
But man, Canada's beautiful, man.
That's great, man. So you guys never got to do anything overseas though?
No. We were planning on it, but then this stuff went through with the label.
Well, I'll tell you what, Phil, man, it's been great catching up with you and actually hearing your story, you know, from your own mouth. It's kind of like you were saying that NoFX book. It means a lot more when they're saying it. So I can look on Wikipedia and see all the stuff, but it's great to hear it from your mouth, man. So I appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to tell the listeners? Or tell me,
you know what? There's one thing that I wanted to bring up with you.
Okay.
I remember when you and I, we were in LA playing the Troubadour I'm sorry, not Trooper. It was the Knitting Factory.
Okay.
And after the show, all of us were hanging out in the parking lot, you know, I mean, getting ready to go. We were all doing Back to the Future trivia. And
yeah, I remember
you and Jeff, our guitar player at the time, he was, you guys were going at it, but you totally slayed him with any knowledge of that movie, dude. So that was a great memory. That was really funny too.
That I remember on that tour, I don't know if it was, I know it was Jeff with the Back to the Future, but somebody else, I don't know what band they were in, but I'm also really good at Saved by the Bell trivia.
Oh shit.
So yeah, the listeners out there, like, we've got the TOTOT hotline. They can call in and try to stump me. If you stump me with a Back to the Future or Saved by the Bell, I'll put it on an episode. So
that's awesome.
But hey man, I just want to thank you so much. It's so great catching up with you, and you've got an amazing, beautiful family, and I'm so happy for you, and couldn't have happened to a better guy, man.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate it.
Well, I tell you what, when this episode's out, I'll get a hold of you and let you know, but yeah, man, it's been wonderful, and have a great night.
You too, brother. We'll keep in touch, okay. Brother.
Talk to you later, man. Thanks.
All right. Later. Bye.
And there it was, my conversation with Philip Wynn from A Thorn for Every Heart. I had a great time talking to Philip. It had been so long since we've actually talked. We've, you know, shot the shit back and forth on Instagram, but that's about it. So I'm very happy for Philip and his beautiful family, and I'm glad that he's doing well. But I am, you know, really hoping for that A Thorn for Every Heart reunion. Hopefully they'll get back together. He is going to send me that record that we talked about. I can't wait to check that out. And this episode was a lot of fun, so thank you guys so much for coming back week in and week out. This podcast is going to keep going. I'm going to keep doing episodes. I've got the next 4 episodes all planned out. And next week on the show, it's kind of special to me. A lot of you guys might not know him, but my step cousin, I don't know if that's a term, but my step cousin, Adam Glass, he was the singer in a band called Ripped Away that was a band that my first band, Chronic Chaos, played with all the time. And then when both of those bands kind of ended, we started a band called The Widow Jenkins, which ended up later on, Joel Green, alum from the podcast that used to be in the band, Emery, joined. We had label interest and we did some touring, and it was just a lot of fun. And Adam's going to be on the show next week. And I think we had a really, really good conversation. And I hope you guys come back and check that out. Even if you don't know what The Widow Jenkins is, or you don't know Adam, or even if you don't really know who I am, it's a good episode. I think you'll gain something from checking it out. So make sure you're following us on all of the social media platforms, TOTOT Podcast, subscribe on iTunes and all that stuff. Please leave us a review. Call the hotline. We have a TOTOT hotline. It is 1-765-372-8818. That is 1-765-372-8818. Okay, so that's it. I'm going to leave you with a song by Philip's band, A Thorn for Every Heart. And it was hard for me to choose. I had a couple on my computer, and then I had Philip send me a couple of songs that he thought maybe you guys would like. So I think I'm going to play 99 with an Anchor, which is one of my favorite songs by them. So I'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much. Make sure you're checking out my sponsors. Super excited to have Rockabilia.com on board. So if you're going to Rockabilia.com and you're going to buy something, make sure you put in the discount code PCTOTOT and save yourself 15%. So yeah, check out Rockabilia.com. So excited to have them as a sponsor. So without further ado, here it is, A Thorn for Every Heart with 99 with an Anchor. See you next week.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.